Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. Chris, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. I hope everybody out there in the listening audience kept themselves cool this past week during the mini heat wave. But that's summer. I live in central Pennsylvania. I appreciate every warm day I can get, so I've been fine with it.
It's like someone once said, they did believe in global warming, but they called it by another term. They called it summer. So that's what we're dealing with. It comes with summer. Before we get started with our topic today, Chris, you and I were having a little chat prior to the recording, and a question came up from one of our listeners, and you had a different answer than Andy and I did when the question came up on our show, different from our listener. The question was, what Penn State running back would you want to use on a short yardage situation? Andy and I probably took the low-hanging fruit with Saquon Barkley. Our listener, Tony from Philadelphia, went another route. Which way did you go?
John Milne. Dude's a hammer. Scored one of the most important short yardage touchdowns in program history. So I guess you do have to ask the question, are you getting that player's offensive line to go along with them? Because then for sure I'm taking number 22, but no matter the situation, I feel really good putting John Milne in there when I need 1 yard.
What's interesting to me is there are several good answers. Tony had Evan Royster and Tony Hunt that he mentioned.
Love the Tony Hunt pick. Big time.
I brought up Larry Johnson, who could be a real hammer himself. So anyway, a lot of good answers. That's a good thing for Penn State's history. All right, let's move on to our topic of the day, Chris. And you and I were talking about this, that we've got this new world in college football, new schedules, new teams and new conferences. They're rid of the divisions within the conferences. But what that does, I think, has created a situation where these handful of really good out-of-conference games, they're going to be really important this year, aren't they?
Yeah, sure, for a couple of reasons. I mean, you know, I actually think it's being a tad overstated how the 12-team playoff is going to allow so much more flexibility for teams to lose games over the course of the season. Like, yes, that's true for sure, that you're going to see probably a 2-loss playoff team this year, almost certainly, maybe even a 3-loss, although I doubt it. But I, you know, just for one thing, when you get those marquee matchups, one team whose fan base fashions their squad a playoff contender is going to have to deal with the fact that they walk away with an L early on, which reframes the rest of their conference season. So right out of the gate, you're going to have one team that maybe thought about itself as a team that could make the 12-team field that now needs to look at the rest of its schedule a little bit differently because there's that much less breathing room. But I also think, you know, as you talk about the evolving world of college football, as the SEC and the Big Ten really rise to the top as the two dominant conferences, you're going to see right out of the gate a couple of measuring stick games that could either, and I think this is probably more likely, unfortunately, cement the narrative that of the two, the SEC is the deeper and better conference, or upset the apple cart if there's one or two results that go the other way that reinforces, hey, Michigan just won the national championship. They won a game that didn't have an SEC team involved in playing for the national title. And we're moving closer to parity between the two power conferences. So that's one of the early season narratives I'm really excited to follow.
It will be interesting, as you pointed out, there's a couple Big Ten Southeast Conference matchups. But I'll also mention, say, the ACC, for credibility's sake, that's what they have to look at their couple matchups and say a win here changes the perspective. I'm thinking in terms of the Clemson-Georgia game. I think Georgia's going to win the game, Chris, okay?
Yeah, probably.
But I believe Clemson and the entire ACC is looking at that game as a way to change the entire ACC narrative.
Yeah, and I think it's possible Clemson has a bounce-back season this year. Now, they can have a bounce-back season and not beat Georgia, which I don't think they're going to do. But to your point, that would be one of the biggest paradigm-shifting results you could imagine, right? Because maybe we'll get into this before we get into the season. If I were filling out an AP ballot this year, I would have Ohio State as my number one team. But you can't really argue with people who would put Georgia in that spot either. And Clemson was, for the last several years, if you look at the last decade or so, I think you would consider them to have been in the elite tier, right? The infamous elite tier of college football. Clemson's in there. And I think if you were to take a flash poll right now, the consensus around the sport is that they've dropped out. And this is a really important season for them, I think, in that if they don't outperform expectations, I think you'll get almost unanimity that they're out. And once you're out, it's pretty hard to climb back in, especially if you're somebody who's really clawed your way into that highest rung like Clemson did. I think if you look at what Clemson did as a program, I was just having this conversation with somebody not too long ago, that's really the model as a Penn State fan that you're hoping the Nittany Lions can follow in terms of going from great to elite. So, you know, again, they're going to have to win their conference, I think, if they want to change that conversation. They don't need to beat Georgia to do that. But, man, if they could find a way to win that game, it would shake a lot of things up, huh?
Definitely. And that's why I think those out-of-conference games have more importance to them than they should even. The entire ACC, if Georgia shellacks Clemson, okay, if they school them, which is possible, okay, I can't picture Clemson crushing Georgia. I can picture Georgia crushing Clemson.
Yep.
At that point, Clemson can go undefeated through their conference schedule, but they did nothing that changed the narrative. In fact, they perhaps put the nail in the coffin for the ACC that, yep, the champion of the conference will go to the playoffs because they have to. But the rest of someone else now, you have a two-loss Florida State, say, and the ACC. After Georgia, if Georgia were to crush Clemson, a two-loss Southeast Conference team is going to go in way before the two-loss Clemson.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, again, look, maybe some folks are probably less high on Clemson this season than I am, but I still think the general consensus is that the two best programs in the ACC this year are Florida State and Clemson. And so probably not a great look in terms of trying to build credibility for your conference, if indeed you do get that blowout result, Jim, as you combine that with the Orange Bowl against Florida State, where they got absolutely, I understand all the, you know, caveats around that, where they had guys opting out and all that, injuries, but they got absolutely smoked by Georgia. And so if Clemson can't stay on the field with them either, that's going to even further reinforce the perception that there's big brother, little brother conferences, and the ACC gets their champion in, and nobody else merits further consideration for one of the at-large spots. So, yeah, it's a really important game, not just in the final result, but just kind of how it plays out and whether or not Clemson looks like they belong on the field with the Dogs.
What other out-of-conference games are you looking at that have this kind of effect on how we perceive the entire conference?
Well, I mean, it's an obvious answer, but I think it's so fascinating for how the season is going to play out is Michigan, Texas. And, just as a side note, this is something I love about college football, that even in this era of expanded playoff, where there's going to be more opportunities to play into the postseason and contend for a national championship, what goes on early on in the season really does carry a fairly significant amount of weight, in part because we don't have an objective quantified system of selecting these teams. It's not like there's tiebreakers like you have in the NFL it's ultimately going to come down to the whims of a committee. And, you know, there are positives and negatives to that. But I guess since most of college football history has been defined by a certain degree of messiness, they called it the mythical national championship through the first, like, I don't know, whatever, 100 plus years of the sports history. Consistent with that, I guess I enjoy that there continues to be a little bit of messiness where the quote unquote narrative around perceptions of conference strength is going to play into invariably who gets selected for those last few playoff spots. And so I think, again, like that to me might be the marquee Big Ten on SEC matchup. I'm sure we'll get to LSU, USC at some point in the show. But Michigan's got a lot to prove as the defending national champion who has lost a lot. And Texas has maybe even more because it's their first year in the SEC. They're expected to carry the banner for that conference into the playoffs. And they just finally crawled into the four-team field last year and didn't win a game. So that one, I think the hype is off the charts. I'm really looking forward to that one.
I really am too. There's a lot that goes on there. Now, the difference with that game versus the Clemson-Georgia game, as you pointed out, in the ACC, we think there's Clemson and Florida State, and really that's about it. So if Clemson goes down hard against Georgia, I think that crushes the entire ACC. Michigan going down to losing to Texas won't have the same effect, of course, on the Big Ten because you still have Oregon and Ohio State who are so highly regarded. Now, the other one you alluded to, I know we have less than a minute left in this first segment, is LSU-USC. Interesting game for both teams.
Yeah. You know, and I was just thinking about, like, who are the stakes higher for in the Texas-Michigan game? That same question is really interesting for LSU-USC because, again, if LSU loses to a USC team, I think we're all expecting to have kind of a substandard defense. They're really behind the eight ball in terms of national perception, although, of course, by virtue of their conference schedule, they can climb back into it. So I guess I would have to say probably USC. Like, they've got a rough ride through their first year of the Big Ten. They've got to stack wins early.
They do, and I think where USC is in the pecking order in the Big Ten might be similar to where LSU is in the Southeast Conference. I want to explore that a little more when we get back, Chris.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Chris. We're talking about college football in general, starting with the big games in the out-of-conference schedule. And Chris, you would think with the 12-team playoff now, these out-of-conference big games might not have as much meaning because you can bounce back from them. And yes, you can. But I think the outsized ramifications are greater because of the mix. You have the big two conferences. So when you have Michigan versus Texas, and who does it mean more to? Man, it means a lot to both of them because I'm not sure either one could recover from that extra loss when it comes down to the tiebreakers. You know, you know, you said early on that you need to have as few as two losses versus three. It would be very hard to make the playoffs with the third loss. if Texas loses to Michigan, boy, there's not a lot of margin for error there. And the same thing for Michigan.
For sure, the pressure's on Texas in that game. I don't think there's – I mean, Michigan, first of all, you win a title, you've got to be playing with house money for a while, right, in just in terms of – excuse me, how everybody feels about the program. But, yeah, like to your point, if Texas makes the playoffs last year in a four-team field and loses and cannot make the national championship game and then regresses that they can't make a four-team field – in 2024, there were a lot of disgruntled folks around Austin. And if they take that L early, like you said, but very, very perilous trying to navigate their SEC schedule.
Now, you look at the LSU-USC game, I think at least my attitude towards it is a little different. I think each team has to look at this as a way to win the tiebreaker down the road. So if you're LSU and win this game and have the very real possibility of two losses within the conference. And with two losses, there's a good chance you're going to need a tiebreaker somewhere to win. Does not this out-of-conference win give you that, especially if USC outperforms our expectations? If it's a 9-3 USC and one of those three losses is LSU, does that not give LSU that extra tiebreaker? And then you could flip the names and get the same argument for USC.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably fair. I mean, I would buy that as a counter argument for sure. I like that idea of a tiebreaker for one of the at-large spots in the playoffs.
Let's look at a couple of these other games. Alabama at Wisconsin. In a Nick Saban year, I would still assume Alabama would go into Wisconsin and walk away with a huge win.
Yeah.
This year, new coach, so there's at least some questions. Second year, Luke Fickell at Wisconsin, is the win would be phenomenal for both Wisconsin program in the Big Ten if Wisconsin could pull it off.
Yes. I kind of feel like we're maybe unintentionally, but we're dealing with these in order of likelihood for the upset to occur, right? Like, you know, and this one of particular interest to Penn State fans, because we're going to go to Madison this year. And I don't know that people have a really good handle on what Wisconsin's going to look like. I think the general agreement is that they're going to be better than they were last year. Although I think a lot of folks were surprised that they weren't better than they were in year one under Luke Fickell. It's not like the cupboard was bare when he got there. Wisconsin is definitely, I think, unfortunately for them and for college football, I like Wisconsin and I think it's fun when they're good and competitive. I think they're probably a program that's going to feel the squeeze of the NIL era in a way that Penn State is feeling it, frankly, but it's going to be even worse for them. So I respect Luke Fickell as a coach. I don't know that just because he's a good coach, it means that he's automatically going to be able to restock and rebuild quickly there. I don't give them much chance at all in that game. Although, like you said, something of a perilous situation there for Kalen DeBoer early on, especially as they're looking ahead maybe to that huge matchup with Georgia. That it's I don't think it's the following week. I think they've got a bye in between, but it's the next game they play after they go up to Madison. And so they got to make that road trip into Big Ten country, which is something that Alabama or any SEC team, frankly, doesn't do very often. And, you know, Madison's a tough place to play. Maybe that's going to end up being a night game. And, you know, are they worried about the Georgia game? Are they kind of taking this one for granted and thinking, okay, we're going to go up here and just handle business and then we can focus on the fact that, you know, I think they last played in the regular season sometime during the Nixon administration. So, you know, you don't see it very often. But I love that stat that from like whatever, like 1983 on, for the longest time, Penn State had played Alabama more than Alabama had played Georgia in the regular season. But that's a really big game for both fan bases and for Kalen DeBoer. So, yeah, I mean, I'm probably trying to talk myself to there even being into intrigue for this game, which I don't think there really is. But to your point, if there would be an upset, it would be hard to outrank it as the most monumental of the whole season.
And again, these games have so much more ramification. It's about the whole conference even. So Wisconsin beats Alabama, you look at the Big Ten Southeast Conference dynamic a little bit differently. What other games out of conference are you looking for, Chris, that have that kind of outside effect on college football?
Yeah, so, you know, I think there are a couple of, like, definitely more under the radar ones that I'm watching just because I'm more because I'm interested in the teams that are involved and what it's going to mean for their the rest of their season. And I know, Jim, maybe we can kind of kill two birds with one stone here, because we were also talking this week about maybe we touch on some teams with the potential to surprise folks with how well they do, in part because their schedule's a little softer. And so I pinpointed an out-of-conference game that I think actually could have big ramifications both for the Big Ten and maybe in the ACC as well. And that's, believe it or not, 21st of September, Rutgers at Virginia Tech. Now, unlike these games that we just talked about, which are going to have profound implications for the national landscape, you know, look, Rutgers, Virginia Tech is not going to ping on many folks' radars in terms of the playoff picture. But I do think there is a possibility that either one of those teams, and we can get into it here and maybe talk a bit more as we go on in the show about these teams with schedules that they could just sneak up on people. If you look at Rutgers' schedule and you look at Virginia Tech's schedule, both of them appear to be, you know, to one degree or another, less rigorous, okay, is maybe a polite way of saying it. And I'll talk about that a little bit. But Rutgers won the game last year, and that was a big measuring stick game for them and how far they had progressed under Greg Schiano. And this year, the focus is going to be on Brent Pry. And I think, you know, probably there are a fair number of Penn State fans who are just at least casually keeping track of how he's performing down in Blacksburg. The expectations among their fan base, I think this season, are pretty high. They ended the season well last year. They're bringing a whole lot back. They were a very young team. I think they made some moves in the transfer portal. And so I'll talk to you about Virginia Tech's schedule here in a second. But I do think the meeting between those two teams will determine which one comes out of it with a chance to really sneak up on people and finish the season in the 9-win range, competing for 8-9 wins. In Virginia Tech's case, 9 and maybe more. So, you know, if you're somebody who just loves to watch an interesting college football game, that one's got some implications that I assume is and should be off the radar of most folks.
I'm very interested in that game also. Again, it's that interconference, and we're going to hit on how the schedules for several teams, because of the new non-division, and Rutgers might be the team most affected. Remember, this is a team who I would always say they started every season 0-3. Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. 3 losses on their schedule every year.
Yeah.
Guess what, Chris? They don't play any of those 3 teams. And they don't play Oregon either, the other team that's considered one of the elite in the Big Ten. So for a Rutgers team, yes, this Virginia Tech game has an outsized effect. Now, we may not think of them as a 9-win potential team, but they could be this year.
For sure. Just to give folks some context here, the Rutgers schedule, they start the season against Howard and Akron, and then they play that road game at Virginia Tech. Then they're home versus Washington, and that's going to be a night game. They are at Nebraska. They host Wisconsin and UCLA. Then they go to USC, host Minnesota, travel to Maryland, play Illinois at home, and then finish up in East Lansing against Michigan State. Now, they'll win those two early non-conference games. And then again, like I said, kind of pivotal, that Virginia Tech game is going to be, I think, very, very important for them. And then you start getting into the question of how good are some of these teams that there are bigger brand names but might, for one reason or another, be down. Washington is really a big question mark coming into this season. Nebraska, who I think we'll maybe talk about later, is a big question mark. We just talked about how Wisconsin's a question mark. Those are their next three games. UCLA, same situation. It's tough for me to imagine them going out to the West Coast and winning at USC, but I could see them going 2-2 over that stretch of those four games I just mentioned before the road trip to Southern Cal. And then these last four teams, Minnesota, Maryland, Illinois, Michigan State, they all feel like you could credibly argue those as coin flip games for where Greg Schiano has Rutgers right now.
You really can. And Chris, this creates a good segue into where I want to go in the second half of our show is now translate this. Okay, who's got the big out of conference games to what they have within their conference. And it's very different for teams within the same conference. You have a very different schedule depending on who you are. And I want to explain to you when we got back how I broke down schedules for both the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference. I'm going to get your take when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're talking about the upcoming 2024 college football season, taking a look at the schedule, the national schedule, and the importance of some of these out-of-conference games. We're talking Rutgers, Virginia Tech. We looked at it from the Rutgers point of view. How about from Virginia Tech and our old friend Brent Pry?
Yeah, and I look at this only for two reasons. Number one, there's the Brent Pry angle. And just again, if we're giving people reasons to look around the world of college football and look for stories that might be interesting to watch. I mean, I think most people listening to the show probably love the sport writ large like I do. I mean, nothing like the Nittany Lions, but I love just sitting and watching games all day long during the fall. To give you a Virginia Tech schedule, and again, important to kind of understand the arc of their season. They started out, Brent Pry had a rough year his first season. Everybody understood that. The cupboard was very bare when he got to Blacksburg. And so then they had a rough start to last season and then really came on late. And so that has what has fueled expectations for this year. So they start the year at Vanderbilt. And then it's interesting, Jim, for two consecutive weeks, we have James Franklin bowls where the head coaches on both sidelines are former James Franklin assistants, starting with Charles Huff at Marshall and then Ricky Ronnie, Old Dominion. They're playing on the – they host Marshall and they travel to Old Dominion. And again, there's that Rutgers game. So, you know, again, it's not inconceivable that Virginia Tech could be 3-0 heading into that game at home versus Rutgers. Then the next week they begin conference play. They travel to Miami, and that's going to be a 7:30 kickoff on ESPN. That should be a tough game. I don't expect them to win that. But then they follow that road game at the Hurricanes up with a road game at Stanford, a home game against Boston College, home again versus Georgia Tech, on the road at Syracuse. And then the second week of November, they host Clemson before another James Franklin Bowl. They travel to face Manny Diaz and Duke and wrap it up with their rivalry game against Virginia. Now, when I give you that schedule, Jim, you could very easily argue nine wins out of that, right? And if Clemson is on the downswing, as a lot of people are, maybe that's even a winnable game if they get on a roll. So I think Virginia Tech, just by virtue of their schedule, is a team that has the ability to pop up and appear in the top 25 and surprise a lot of people.
Well, it depends. Will they be able to win all or most of those mid-range games? You mentioned, like, Rutgers is the out-of-conference, but can they also – can they handle Duke? Can they handle Virginia? Those games.
Yep.
You know, they're – I hate to call it cream of a poor crop, but there's got to be some. It's kind of like the Big Ten West kind of thing. Somebody's got to end up in first place.
Exactly.
Even if they beat each other up and end up with 2-3 losses, somebody still has to end up first among that group. So that's what the challenge for Virginia Tech has. All right, Chris, I want to shift over to a conversation about the Big Ten schedule and the Southeast Conference schedule.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you how I looked at these two conferences. I think in the Big Ten, there's a pretty good split with the four best teams. And then I created what I call the next four, tier one and tier two.
All right.
See if you agree with me. Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, and Penn State, tier one.
Yeah, I'll buy it.
All right. Tier two, I had a little bit more trouble with, but I came up with USC, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Washington.
I agree with USC and Iowa for sure. And I think, again, Washington probably needs to be in there, although I don't rule out the possibility that they're just straight up bad. I'll go there. Yeah, I think you're probably right. Yeah, but what was the fourth team? Oh, Wisconsin. Yeah. Okay.
I did something similar in the Southeast Conference. Now there's more teams to consider there for the top eight.
Before you get to the SEC, yeah. Jim, let me ask you this: of that second four, which one do you think is in the most tenuous position of dropping out? Like, which was the hardest to put into the second tier?
I think Washington wasn't hard to put in the second tier, but I could see where that just falls apart for them in this first year. But it's almost like respect out of what they did last season.
Sure, right.
It's still the same team. Well, maybe not. You know, the very good quarterback is gone. The very good coach is gone. The great wide receiver is gone. You know, there's so much of a changeover that, yes, I think that has the potential to be a very tough season for Washington. I think I put them there as respect for what they did a year ago. The question is, who would you replace them with?
Well, that was my next question. Who do you think is right on the lip of the cup? Who was most in danger or striking distance of making it into that top eight?
Oh, boy. All right. Let me just read off the other teams.
Sure.
For all of our edification, you have Illinois, no. Indiana, no. Maryland?
No.
Okay. Michigan State?
There's at least a little juice around the Jonathan Smith hiring, but yeah, they would not be my first choice. No. Although they could be in the mix, right? Like, that's a program that has shown they at least have the horses to do it and get there and be in the conversation.
Minnesota?
I think definitely not. No.
Nebraska?
Nebraska's the team I would pick, I think.
Me too. Not Northwestern, not Purdue. Despite what we said about Rutgers, no. UCLA, no. So, you know, who'd we have? Nebraska? Potentially?
Yeah. If in my mind, now I would probably, to answer my own question, I think I would say Wisconsin's probably on shakier ground in terms of my perception of who the top eight in the conference are, even than Washington. Because, again, to your point, somebody's got to win these games, right?
Yes.
I would imagine a little bit more of a battle between Nebraska and Wisconsin, and they do play each other. The end of the season for Nebraska is just interesting. We can get into this a little bit later, perhaps. But they wrap up going to USC and then playing Wisconsin and Iowa. What's that?
Yeah. And they both have big-name coaches in their second year. hoping to make that big jump. Nebraska has Matt Rhule. Yep. So, okay, I understand it, but I'm now more comfortable than ever with my tier one and tier two. In the, excuse me, the Southeast Conference, I have tier one, Georgia, Texas, Alabama, and Ole Miss. And let me give you tier two so you could, I have then, let me make sure I get the Missouri, Tennessee, LSU, and Oklahoma, tier two. Texas A&M is the only team is the team on the cusp, I think. How do you feel about that?
And speaking of Texas A&M, another huge out-of-conference game early in the season is going to be Texas A&M versus Notre Dame.
Right. That gets Texas A&M into the conversation if they could win that game. But
and probably takes Notre Dame, if not out, completely out of it, real close, right out of the gate because of some of the limitations they have of not being a conference team.
Exactly. But Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, tier one. You okay with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, you're definitely not going to argue with the first three, right? You've got two playoff teams there and one that probably could have and perhaps should have been in the playoffs. And then, you know, as we know well here in Penn State country, Ole Miss has got a really good football team, and all they did was go out and spend a boatload of money in the offseason to make it better.
All right. And then tier two, just as a reminder, Missouri, Tennessee, LSU, and Oklahoma. There's a reason for me doing this, Chris.
Okay.
I use that system to determine the strength of schedule for everybody in the conference. How many tier one games do you have? How many tier two games do you have? And I don't care about the rest of the games. You should be winning those games. If you don't, right, shame on you. So where do you want to start? Big Ten or Southeast Conference? And I think, Chris, we can see the disparity in the schedules by looking at how many games you have against tier one and tier two teams. So
let's go SEC first. We can wrap up in Big Ten country.
Okay, let's do that. So as you go through this, just like later on, I'll say with Ohio State, Georgia actually plays all three other tier one teams. They play Alabama, Texas, and Ole Miss. If they win, if they go undefeated, they've earned it, Chris.
Yeah, and they're one of the few teams that you can imagine having the horses to be able to hold up through that schedule, right?
And don't forget, they also play Clemson out of conference.
Yes.
That's the kicker.
Well, I think this is good for it's good for their program. It's definitely good for the sport because if you remember last year, the conversation around Georgia is they're going to go undefeated in their sleep. And so the only way we're going to get a good sense of what kind of team they've got is when they get to the SEC championship game. And I think for the Georgia fans who were upset that either they lost a close one to Alabama and then got shut out of the playoffs, that's why. You couldn't look at their regular season and say, oh, okay, you know, they look at these marquee wins they had on their regular season schedule. So they don't need to worry about that this year. And if we're really trying to get a sense of how good is that program right now, has Kirby really taken over as the absolute alpha in the sport? I think it's great that we're actually going to get to see some really good conference or, you know, in conference matchups for them.
And putting Clemson in there along with Alabama, Texas, and Ole Miss, and in Tier 2, they just have one game. That's against Tennessee. Georgia, to me, they can lose two games. They're still in the playoffs, Chris.
100%.
Got to be. Now, and I'm just going to throw this out quickly in the half minute we have left, just to show the disparity. Texas, in their Southeast Conference schedule, only has one game against the Tier 1 team, Georgia, one game, Tier 2, Oklahoma, and it could be an argument that Oklahoma is the least of the Tier 2 teams. Meanwhile, Oklahoma, they have three Tier 1 games and three Tier 2 team games. They've got six games among the two top tiers, where Texas and also Missouri, I'll throw in, they only have two. That, Chris, is the disparity. We'll keep talking about that when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're looking at the national college football picture, specifically looking at the schedules and the disparity for teams within the same conference with no divisions. There's a very, very big disparity between what Team A and Team B have on their schedule. And Chris, as I always say, I have no life, so this is what I do with my time. And I'll just put it to you. What are your thoughts on the fact that I created Tier 1 and Tier 2, the top eight teams in the Southeast Conference? Texas has one game against Tier 1, one game Tier 2. Meanwhile, Oklahoma has a total of six games, 3-3. If I'm Oklahoma, I want out of the Southeast Conference, Chris.
Well, these scheduling processes are really complicated. I understand that there are a lot of moving pieces that the conferences have to consider when they're setting their schedules. And as we've seen with the disaster around trying to get the Penn State whiteout, both a primetime time slot and a marquee opponent, sometimes you still don't get everything right. So taking all of that into consideration, I don't know that I buy the tinfoil hat theory that this is like welcome to the conference hazing for Oklahoma, but I don't care. I still kind of feel like it is, you know, like I'll entertain a good conspiracy theory. I'm willing to believe that maybe David Stern had the frozen envelope in the Patrick Ewing draft. So I'm willing to believe maybe I think this always happens. I mean, you saw it when Nebraska and then definitely when Maryland and Rutgers joined the Big Ten, like, there's a little bit of hazing of the new guy, and I feel like that's the situation for Oklahoma. And by the way, again, just following college football storylines this season, I think this is one of the worst times for Oklahoma to have a schedule like that, although they did just extend Brent Venables with another, I think, 5 or 6 year deal. But I think you and I have talked about before, Jim, Texas, you feel like, is in a pretty good place right now. And to emphasize our point from earlier in the show, they don't have a lot of resume builders on the conference slate. So all the more important that they beat Michigan early on to burnish that resume. But the flip side is that most of their games look like they shouldn't be too difficult. So they're going to be able to continue to put up a good, nice looking number in the wins column. So that should help them to carry forward the momentum they have from the last few seasons. Oklahoma, on the other case, still doesn't seem to have regained its footing after the surprise departure of Lincoln Riley. In a new conference, if they're already teetering and they have a bad year, like not inconceivable at all that they have like a 6-6 type season, that could really be a body blow, because there are so many other programs in that conference that are clawing to get into the second tier, right? The on deck circle. Because number one, they all dream of being in the top tier, and Ole Miss being put there this preseason, even if they don't end up earning it, the fact that we believe they belong there, they're proof positive that it can be done. But also because there are a lot of rewards for being in the second tier of the SEC. That's probably going to produce at least one or two playoff teams every year. And so Oklahoma gets beat up this year and just reinforces the perception that they're, they're on the decline. That's real bad news for the Sooners.
It is, and it's interesting you talk about the hazing of the new team, yet Texas, among the Tier 1 and Tier 2 teams, has what appears to be the easiest schedule among the group, with just one game from each tier, including the Oklahoma and Georgia. And the only other team that only has two games among the top two tiers is Missouri. And they are Alabama and, of course, Oklahoma. Everybody, Oklahoma plays everybody in that top tier. So, and my overriding point to all this is, how do you judge, you know, an Oklahoma team if they go through this gauntlet with two losses? You got to look at them a whole lot different than how you might look at Missouri with two losses.
Yeah, yeah. This is a very good point.
And, you know, where I think until now, and we've talked about this, with a four-team playoff, you just, how many losses do you have? You got two losses, you're out. Undefeated, you're in. One loss, we make a tiebreaker, and that tiebreaker is typically based on conference, not actual schedule on who you beat. This year, it will be based on who you beat. All right. You want to look at the Big Ten in the same way, Chris?
Let's do it.
All right. Just a reminder, Jim's Tier 1 and Tier 2 from the Big Ten. Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, and Penn State, Tier 1. USC, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Washington, Tier 2. We mentioned earlier, Chris, you went into it very well. Rutgers plays none of those Tier 1 teams. None of them. None of them. Okay. How does that happen? You know, who do you know in the schedule maker's office? And but they do have the three games with Tier 2, Washington, Wisconsin, and USC. They pull off a win in one of those, Chris. One of those. Boy, they, you know, dare I say there's a 10-2 possibility for Rutgers?
That would require everything going right for them in a way that it normally does not. But yeah, it's about who you play, and it's not crazy. It's not crazy to suggest it's possible.
So let's look at the team among that top eight who has the easiest schedule. And it's Iowa, Chris. It's Iowa. They play one Tier 1 team, Ohio State, and let's just call that a loss. After that, they've got Washington and Wisconsin from Tier 2. And as we said, you know, if we questioned any two teams in the Tier 2, it was Washington and Wisconsin.
Yeah, right. I mentioned the importance of Texas A&M Notre Dame earlier, especially in Notre Dame. Part of that is because they, along with Rutgers and Iowa, are just three of the most Charmin soft schedules in the country this year. I mean, it is just like, you know, clown car schedules for these teams. So, and we've seen this from Iowa before, where they stack questionable wins, and, you know, what are you going to do with them? I mean, they, you know, it's crazy to think, even just back to the 2021 game between Penn State and Iowa, the infamous booing of the injured players. Iowa was ranked in the top four. And again, it was just like, you know, everybody else is losing. They keep winning. It's like, well, I don't know. We got to keep ranking them until they play a team with a pulse, and then they get their skulls caved in. So this could be another one of those years.
So, yeah, and there are other games, you know, Minnesota, Northwestern, UCLA.
Jim, let me just stop you real quick. Yeah. Let me ask you a serious question. Do you think if they would have played, let's say, 12 quarters in the Big Ten championship game, okay? 12 quarters, so no, three full games. Yeah, and they wouldn't have scored a point. There's no way. Michigan leaves the starting defense and they don't score.
I knew where that was headed. No.
Yeah.
No.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, hey, how many more quarters would they have had to play Penn State before they would have passed midfield, Chris?
Yeah.
So there, you know, there's your answer. But, you know, in the other games, there's the last game against Nebraska is the only other team that I even see, you know, with a shot. So Iowa, that is as soft a schedule as you're going to see exactly. But what I also like to see, I said Georgia, they're the only team in the Southeast Conference to play all three of the other Tier 1 teams. guess what? Ohio State's the only team in the Big Ten who plays the other three, big three, Penn State, Michigan, and Oregon. And I think what the Big Ten schedule makers did, what obviously Ohio State's always going to play Michigan. They decided Ohio State and Michigan would play Penn State every other year. Okay. They didn't force them to play them twice. So for Michigan, it's the off year. This just so happens to be, I don't think 2 years ago, they were thinking Oregon is going to be an elite team. I think it just worked out that way, that this was Ohio State's year to hit both Michigan and Penn State, and then they get Oregon. You know, someone else might have argued leading into this, it could have been Washington is that elite team, or USC. Coming from the old Pac-12 teams. So when we're looking at this, Ohio State definitively has the tough schedule. Michigan, I think they're in the middle. They play both Oregon and Ohio State, and they get USC and Washington as tier two. Penn State may not be Charmin soft, Chris, but it ain't bad. They only get Ohio State among the elites, but they get, and then they get USC, Wisconsin, and Washington from tier two. Not too bad a schedule for our Nittany Lions.
Yeah, no, not terrible. And I've seen some debate online about how you should characterize the strength of Penn State's schedule this year. I think the one thing, and yeah, for sure, it's one that sets up relatively favorably. The one thing I would say is that you've got a number of difficult road trips in there. You know, if maybe the split between road and home games was a little bit different, you had more of them in Beaver Stadium, but you're at Wisconsin, you're at USC, and you're opening the season at West Virginia.
Yes, and that scares Penn State fans, rightfully so. But if you think you are a national championship contender, I don't think you should be concerned about West Virginia, USC, and Wisconsin on the road. Big if.
Yeah. I mean, I'll grant you probably more so West Virginia and Wisconsin. USC at home with that cross-country road trip, that is a very difficult situation to be in for any East Coast team. And I think we're maybe at this point undervaluing USC a little bit. So, yeah, I think that to me is maybe the pivotal game of the season for Penn State this year.
It could very well be. But, Chris, my last point is, it doesn't, you're a Southeast Conference team, it doesn't mean your schedule is going to be a Southeast Conference tough, tough schedule. Same thing in the Big Ten. A lot of disparity. I'll give you the last word.
Well, I think you hit on maybe one of the hidden big headlines of the year, which is the perceived two best teams in the country in Ohio State and Georgia have two of the toughest conference schedules with the most marquee matchups. And again, I think that's great for college football.
It is. And remember, throw in Georgia also playing Clemson. Boy, that I want to see Georgia-Clemson, Georgia-Alabama, Georgia-Texas, Georgia-Ole Miss. That is a fantastic schedule. That is it, Chris. Thank you all for joining us. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.